I'm Gene Pasale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years, which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. And before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, October 12th. On this day in 1492, Christopher Columbus reaches what he thinks is an island in Asia, mistakenly believing that his landfall in the Bahamas accomplished his goal of reaching the famed Spice Islands of the Far East, a voyage which was funded by King Ferdinand and Queen Isabella of Spain. Columbus's error was the most successful blunder in human history, opening up the entire Western Hemisphere to later European explorers, including the Spanish, French, Dutch, and English, who would help develop the region, which was enormously rich in natural resources. In 1776, British generals Henry Clinton and William Howe bring 4,000 of their troops up the East River near New York City in hopes of surrounding George Washington's forces and prompting an early surrender for the Americans. Washington deftly maneuvered his army, later facing the British at the inconclusive Battle of White Plains. And in the year 2000, terrorists linked to Osama bin Laden commandeered a small boat which rammed the USS Cole as she was docked in Yemen, killing 17 sailors and wounding 38 more in what became the fourth terrorist attack against America under the administration of President Bill Clinton. The event following the 1993 terrorist attack on the World Trade Center and the bombings of American embassies in Kenya and Tanzania in 1998. Historians now recognize that America had been under attack for years, but did little to prevent it. Alexander Hamilton has been in the public eye quite a bit lately. Over the years, biographies by noted historian Forrest MacDonald and authors Ron Chernow, Michael E. Newton, and others have brought attention to Hamilton's many accomplishments. And the play Hamilton on Broadway grabbed the attention of theatergoers who loved the depiction of this gentleman as a true hero of the early republic. Hamilton's many skills in finance, business, international trade, currencies, commodities, law, and other areas helped him transform our nation from a bankrupt collection of independent states to the most successful country in human history. One man was so impressed with Hamilton's accomplishments, he started a new group titled the Alexander Hamilton Awareness Society, dedicated to spreading the word about his numerous achievements. Rand Chalet is the president of the AHA, which celebrates its fifth anniversary this week. He's conducted dozens of events all around the Mid-Atlantic region, highlighting Hamilton's policies and accomplishments, including ones at the historic Trinity Church in Lower Manhattan, the location of Hamilton's gravesite, the Museum of American Finance in Manhattan, and at the monument in Weehawken, New Jersey, where the famous duel with Aaron Burr occurred, and many other locations, telling the story of the most misunderstood and least appreciated of the founding fathers. Due to Rand's efforts, Hamilton is experiencing a resurgence, and he's with us here today to talk about it. Rand, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Gene. Thank you for the opportunity to talk with your listeners, thank you for your recent talks on Alexander Hamilton and his financial economic programs there recently. Our AHA Society board enjoyed reviewing your exhibit you had at the Chads Ford Historical Society. So good to be with you.
Well, thanks so much. For our listeners who may not be aware, I actually am writing my master's degree thesis on Alexander Hamilton as the architect of the American financial system and portray Hamilton in the flesh, in full uniform, in different speeches all around the area. Rand, tell us a little bit about your background. What profession have you worked in? Where do you live?
I worked for IBM my professional career. My whole track was mathematics and computer science, so when I spoke at Hamilton College last week, I invited my history teacher, who said, Cholet history. It was very unlikely. Mm-hmm. I was in large systems development for IBM. Then I went into consulting, business transformation in the aerospace and automotive industry. Mm. And on an engagement with GM in Detroit, I was asked to stay another year. And they said, how can we get you to stay? And I said, move me to Tampa Bay, Florida. And she said, done. And so that's how 23 years ago, relocated to Florida, currently where the base of the AHA operations are.
Now, are you actually in Tampa or just nearby?
Nearby in Clearwater, Florida.
Clearwater. And for our listeners who don't know exactly the geographic dimensions, where exactly is Tampa? Is that on the West Coast, East Coast, Center?
Yes, Gene, it's on the West Coast, right on the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay.
We're about an hour and a half southwest of Orlando, Disney World.
And right next to St. Pete, correct?
Yes, just above St. Petersburg.
Yeah, very good. You're the president of the AHA. Tell us just a bit about how you actually got interested in Hamilton to begin with. And I know that you've done a lot of reading and research on Hamilton. So just tell us about how you got so involved in him.
Well, it's a very interesting story, since I was never interested or reading of history books that someone recommended I read about Sam Adams. So I said, okay. I read Sam Adams, and I was really intrigued. And as a patriotic American, I said, wow, I should know this stuff. So I read another book by that author on Henry Knox. And then I was off and running, studying 47 different founding fathers, mothers, and what I call key contributors. But one of the individuals I was not interested in learning about was this guy, Alexander Hamilton, because he was characterized as self-centered, egotistical, overbearing, monarchist, only cared about rich people. And so I stayed away from it, and it wasn't until later, reading a book by Joseph Ellis on the Founding Brothers, that I had to read a chapter on Hamilton, and it caught my attention, and then I started reading more. And as I did with each of the people I studied, I kept a list of what they actually did, what they actually accomplished, not their reputation, but what they actually did. And so that's what really caught my attention, and then I really started to understand the contributions of Alexander Hamilton.
Now, you've mentioned to me personally that you've read over 50 books on Hamilton.
Yes, I'm just in the middle of my 68th right now.
Oh, my Lord. And what are you reading now?
Right now, I've been reading a book. It's called Alexander Hamilton and American Foreign Policy, which is one of the most incredible books. I knew there were so many dimensions of Hamilton's life, and I knew he touched on foreign policy, but this book by Lycan, L-Y-C-A-N, is remarkable about how soon Hamilton became involved during the war, just in Congress after the war, and how those things informed his recommendations to George Washington during the two terms as president in Washington administration.
Yeah, as I've come to know through my research, Hamilton held a large sway with Washington. I know that Washington trusted him really as a brother in arms, formerly on the battlefield, and they survived the war together, and I think they implicitly trusted each other. I know that Washington deeply trusted Hamilton and his judgment, so that's interesting about the foreign policy recommendations. You know, Hamilton has received a lot of attention in the last year or so due to the play Hamilton. I have not seen it, but I plan to see it next month. I know that you have seen it. What is your view of the impact of the play, its content? How was the public responding to it?
Well, the interesting thing in analyzing this is how unique this play has been able to interest people across the spectrum. Women and men love it. Young people, those that aren't so young, people of color, those of less color, and politically from left to right, and surprisingly, hip-hop and rap fans like it, as well as traditional Broadway fans. So it's really been so inclusive in interest that it's really gotten a lot of people to pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
What used to happen is for many years, people in their retirement would read about history and really love it in their own world. But what's happened now with a musical, people as young as 7, 8, and 9 are memorizing the whole thing. There are students who are teaching their parents and they're teachers. They're doing their own self-study and research. And so, as one of the songs in the musical says, the world's turned upside down. Mm-hmm. Now it's the young people getting the people that aren't so young interested in it. Mm-hmm. And what's great about that is that now they're the new learners of not just Hamilton, because it's a portal into the other founding fathers and the founding era as well, that now these people will carry this appreciation for 70 to 80 years in their life. Mm-hmm. So it's really having a profound effect.
That is great. You know, I look forward to seeing the play. I have heard that there are a couple of things that aren't quite accurate about the play, but I guess that can be thought of typical as most theatrical productions. Was there anything you found about the play that you wanted to correct or make an adjustment in?
Well, it's interesting because Lin-Manuel Miranda knew our dedication to accuracy, so on March 10th of last year when it was off-Broadway, Nicole Cholet de Vicencio, our vice president, and I went with notebooks in hand to write down all the things that were inaccurate. Mm-hmm. And Nicole and I were really shocked how well the musical gets the essence of Alexander Hamilton, the relationships, and the different debates and discussions of the day. We did understand that there were things where people were together where they weren't necessarily together at that point, because of the need to get the key story points across. Mm-hmm. So really the things that quote unquote weren't accurate were not important to the story and did not detract. And Nicole and I were both impressed that Lin didn't try to take advantage of sensationalism, mm-hmm. which is always susceptible on Broadway. Mm-hmm. So we really came away very positive, impressed with the accuracy of mm-hmm. How Hamilton is depicted.
Now, I think I will see for myself, but I do know one point is a little bit misleading about the play. Everyone in the play, I believe, is a minority. And clearly the founding fathers were not minorities. So I guess that's a little bit different take on it, although they're trying to make a statement about inclusiveness and people coming to this country. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, an interesting point about that is when I talked with Chris Jackson, who depicts George Washington, I talked with Dottie Diggs, who does both Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, is that they felt that those white men from 200 years ago were someone they couldn't relate to, and they knew some of the imperfections from their perspective. So having people of color, and it's about 80% people of what you call of color, because there are dancers, there are the whole troupe, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But it allows people to get past that mm-hmm. That hesitancy. Mm-hmm. And so it really was a brilliant move to move in that direction. And with the music, even though it's been marketed as rap and hip-hop, it's really only about a quarter to 30%. There's so much traditional Broadway, Gilbert and Sullivan,
sure,
blues.
Well, I'll look forward to seeing it. We have to take a quick commercial break, but we will be back. So stay with us, and we'll be back with Living History.
Do you have a wedding, graduation, baptism, confirmation, milestone, or birthday to plan? You need John Surratt Catering, one of the most highly rated and preferred caterers throughout the Philadelphia area. They will be there to create and cater your event while assisting as much or as little as you desire. Planning a decadent, over-the-top company gala? Need help transforming your backyard into the party of the year? Want to wow your clients with a delicious luncheon? Then you need John Surratt Catering. All you have to do is call and they'll handle the rest. Located at 835 Lincoln Avenue in Westchester, visit them at SurrockCatering.com or call 610-640-2836. That's 610-640-2836.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini Services, Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties, with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? G.P. Martini is the answer. 610-873-1696.
WCHE, Chester County's local news source that not only tells you what's happening, but is committed to telling you the behind-the-scenes reason why it's happening.
I'm Gene Fasale, and this is Living History. Today we're talking with Rand Chalet, the president of the Alexander Hamilton Awareness, or AHA, Society. Rand, why do you feel that Hamilton, up until fairly recently, was somewhat overlooked as perhaps one of the most important founding fathers?
Yes, the main reason is the mischaracterization that occurred over the 40 years of the Jeffersonian to Jacksonian period, and then when FDR deified Jefferson and did the memorial, the history books had largely scrapped or negatively characterized Hamilton. So it's really been an effective campaign that just now is people are now starting to look, and when they do look, they are amazed at the contribution and accomplishments of Alexander Hamilton.
Mm-hmm. What do you feel, personally feel, that were Hamilton's most important accomplishments and why?
Well, in a number of areas. One is militarily. Not only did he serve George Washington for 4 years, he ended up in the late 1790s being Major General of the military in the implementation of the U.S. Army, the U.S. Navy, and the U.S. Marines. He also set precedent legal cases that kept money in New York City to rebuild it. It then the next year became the capital of the United States for 5 years. His work on the Constitution, the Federalist, which was his brainchild, and he asked John Jay and James Madison to join him. The implementation of the Constitution, because the Constitution had a lot of promise, but it had to be implemented for those proper checks and balances, and the executive branch had more strength to it than traditionally the legislative would have an extra amount of energy, and Hamilton made sure there was balance. And of course, the main area, because the Constitution, the government system was important, but the second important pillar of our nation was the economic and financial systems that Hamilton designed and put into place.
Exactly. I've done quite a bit of research on Hamilton, and I outlined the fact that Article 1, Section 8 is the lifeblood of the U.S. Constitution. That is something that has Hamilton's fingerprints all over it. It relates to taxes, duties, and commerce, and trading, and issuance of coin and currency, debt issuance, debt pay down, numerous functions of the federal government, which allowed it to literally survive. Without Article 1, Section 8, our country would not have survived as we know it today. And I believe that his financial accomplishments rank right up there with his most important achievements. Why is Hamilton, at least in the minds of some people, still a bit controversial? Obviously, he died in a duel, and some people
right.
know that his personal life was a little colorful, to say the least. But why do you think he still is controversial?
Well, the mischaracterization has made him controversial because those that supported a different vision or a different point of view laid that in place very effectively for many decades. And so that's the main reason that it's perceived as controversial. And then very accomplished authors picked up Hamilton, and they just were having fun with this characterization. And so that's permeated a lot of the literature. And when you get to the truth about what Hamilton did, much of that nonsense goes away, and then the awe of what Hamilton had accomplished, just like I went through that transformation myself.
Mm-hmm. I have found through my work that Hamilton, far and above, was the most gifted of the founding fathers in the fields of finance, banking, commerce-related areas. Tell us, our listeners, your views on that field, on those topics.
Yes, what's fascinating is that Robert Morris, who was the financier of the American Revolution, tried for 10 years to come up with a system and tried to get support from the different states and wasn't successful. When Hamilton took over in 1789 as the first Secretary of Treasury, the nation was essentially bankrupt. There was no script, gold or silver. There was no currency of any value. And at that time, the U.S. owed $52 million. The states owed $25 million. And within 3 years, because of Hamilton's financial and economic initiatives, there was a budget, the first budget surplus. Within 5 years, the notes on the debt that Hamilton restructured and spread out over years and got the interest rates down lower traded 10% above par in London over Britain's notes. So the reality of what he did really showed itself. And the Dutch, who were famous for identifying opportunities to loan money, kept wanting to loan Hamilton more money because they so believed in his economic and financial system. And Hamilton said, no, this is sufficient to our needs.
Exactly. And, in my lecture, I mentioned the fact that when Hamilton was about to take over the United States, America was a financial basket case. By 1794, we had a higher credit rating than any country in Europe. So I think he did an excellent job. Hamilton almost came off the $10 bill, but your group was adamant in keeping him there. Tell us a little bit about your efforts in that area.
Yes, that was very disconcerting to have the current Secretary of Treasury removing initially and then diminishing his presence on the $10 bill. So we partnered with Barbara Howard's group, Women on the 20s, to ensure that women went on the 20s and Hamilton could be retained. Of course, there were many influencers. There were petitions, letters, strategy sessions. I mean, we, the AHA Society, worked every day for 10 months to counter that. And it seemed like a real long shot that the Secretary of State, after being so visible, would change his position, but he did.
Which is great, and to the benefit of us all, and all Hamilton supporters are clearly pleased with that. I rate Hamilton right up there with George Washington, or a relatively close second, as among the most important of the founding fathers. But I was just wondering if you could share your views how he ranks with the other founding fathers for our listeners.
That's a good question, Gene. In fact, when I first, after all my analysis of reading 51,000 pages back 5 years ago, I ranked the top founding fathers, and I had Washington number one, Hamilton number two, James Madison number three, and John Jay number four, of who actually did things that were put in place that we live with and work with today. Mm-hmm. And I was mocked pretty much, but then Joseph Ellis's book came out last year called The Quartet, and those are the four that he points out. Mm-hmm. I'd say there are two key summary statements about that tells Hamilton's value. Number one, that George Washington had Hamilton as his right-hand man for over 22 years during the war, during the establishment of the Constitution, and during both terms of the presidency. So that's a 22-year relationship. Secondly, when analyzing the different visions that were competing back at our founding era, that it was Hamilton's vision that we live with today. And secondly, the core foundations that made it work and find that proper balance really were put in place by Hamilton. And that united the states, brought them together, and from that basis, both the legal, economic, financial, government systems allowed the United States to go from a basket case, using your terminology, into a great and strong nation.
Absolutely. What types of events does the AHA Society sponsor and pursue? I know you do dozens of them all around the East Coast. Just tell us about recent ones and ones coming up in the next few months.
Okay, we have two main annual events. One is around Hamilton's birthday, January 11th, called Happy Birthday Hamilton. And, of course, that will happen again the second week of 2017. Then we have a main substantial summer one called Celebrate Hamilton, which is around the date of the duel and his death, where we celebrate his life. This past July, we had 32 events, 20 sites in 10 days, plus 7 private ones.
And I was at a few of them.
Yes, you were, and you participated as Hamilton at Patterson Great Falls, which is just really a terrific event. So those are the main the main events that we have.
Mm-hmm. Now, the ones at the Museum of American Finance, I know you typically have a speaker there. You've had Michael Newton, who's written a recent book about Hamilton and is working on a multi-volume biography of the founding father. Who do you have coming up in terms of guest speakers? Do you have anybody planned for next year?
We have some big plans that we're just about to finalize and announce both for January and July. One of the things that we do is that we gave out our first Hamilton Legacy Award. Mm-hmm. That will be happening this coming year. We've designated 3 National Hamilton Scholars, and we have 2 more to announce next year.
Excellent.
And we have events at the Museum of American Finance, Trinity Church, New York Historical Society, Weehawken, Patterson, Elizabeth, Morristown, et cetera. So there's quite a few locations. And people can check out our website, the ahasociety.org. We'll talk about all of our events. If people want to learn about Hamilton himself, we have allthingshamilton.com. And if people want to go visit places where Hamilton was, from the Caribbean, Yorktown, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, etc., they can go to, just type in All Places Hamilton or allplaceshamilton.com, and they can see the different events.
Excellent.
And locations.
I've viewed all those sites, and they have a wealth of wonderful information on Hamilton. Why is outreach so important?
Well, because of the vast 2 centuries of mischaracterization, there's a lot to overcome. And many of the books that are out there are just, there's 70 to 80% of them that's accurate and decent, but boy, they just perpetuate a lot of inaccuracy. So on our website, we also have recommended books within different themed areas.
Mm-hmm.
We have now publishers coming to us to validate the accuracy of Hamilton information.
Mm.
And we do our own research with people. From what we haven't been able to do yet, we'll do the further research, and we're tied in with all of the key authors and scholars and biographers of Hamilton to resolve
Excellent.
Anything that's not known.
Excellent. So you're reaching out and correcting the record where necessary, which
Yes.
is very, very useful. And by the way, I have learned a bit from my interactions with you and Michael Newton and others, even Richard Silla, who teaches
Yes.
at NYU Stern School of Business, which is really very, very helpful. And the events are, for our listeners, if you've never been to an AHA Society event, they're wonderful. You will learn a lot. Well, Rand, thank you so much for being with us today on the show. Be sure to tune in next Wednesday, October 19th at 1 p.m. Eastern, when we'll be speaking with Mark Fields, the Executive Director of the Grand Opera House in Wilmington, Delaware. Thank you all for tuning in today to Living History.